Welcome inside the WSOE studios for the Legion of Sports podcast. I'm Chase Williams alongside Harrison Klein, Jake Anthony. Let's hop right into the Super Bowl this past Sunday. Chiefs come out with a 31-20 win. What was your guys' biggest surprise of the Super Bowl? Let's start there.
So in terms of surprises, for me, it was kind of the game that I anticipated with a lot of drama. Obviously, couldn't predict the winner as it was a very close game, but the Chiefs had to rally from behind, which they've been doing all season, and it was a very clear-cut game because they really developed their offense throughout the game and consistently ran the ball, I felt like, and developed Patrick Mahomes off some play action, which they needed to do against that pass rush. For me, there wasn't too many surprises except for the play of the 49ers offense down the stretch, because overall the game was, I don't want to say predictable by any means, but there wasn't any standout surprises to me.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with most of that. Just one surprise was Damian Williams putting up over 100 yards of on the ground rushing. That was a little bit of a surprise. And then also, I agree with you, Jake, how the Niners down the stretch, this is a team that was built around running, and all playoff long we've seen them be able to run the football. And when it came down to it, they had a 10-point lead under 10 minutes to go. You'd expect them to just be able to pretty much run the clock out and, you know, take home the Super Bowl, but unable to do that. And that, of course, allowed the Chiefs to get back in it. So, yeah, I mean, that probably is my biggest surprise in all of this.
You know, for me, my biggest surprise had be that the Chiefs put up 21 fourth quarter points, not necessarily because it's not something I expected the Chiefs to be able to do, but that the Niners defense gave up 21 points. For me, I mean, when the Chiefs went down 10-20, I don't want to say I called the comeback, but I said this game's not over to some kid who told me it was. But it interests me because I feel like these are two teams, and this is really hard to say in the NFL, but I think these are two teams that are set off really well for the future, especially after I was reading a mock draft this morning, and their picks make a lot of sense. But both of these teams, the surprise was how complete the Chiefs felt. We talked off and on throughout the year about the Chiefs' defense being lackluster at times, and I was really impressed with them. And so you kind of already mentioned it. Would you say Damian Williams was your standout player for the game?
I mean, I don't know about standout player, but I think definitely down the stretch, especially that touchdown run he had that basically sealed it. I'd say Mahomes just down the stretch was my standout just because he was able to complete the comeback. But, I mean, Williams definitely surprised me a lot, yeah.
Yeah, for me it's Mahomes only because he ran a touchdown threw in, I think it was two touchdowns, and so, like Harrison mentioned, he led that comeback, and without Patrick Mahomes, I mean, Damian Williams could have ran for 200 yards, and they're not going to win that game. So he's my standout player. Obviously, he won the Super Bowl MVP, but it's just really interesting that at such a young age, he's only started 36 games, and Patrick Mahomes already has an NFL MVP in his second season, and then his second full season as a starter, which is his third NFL season, he won the Super Bowl MVP, obviously a Super Bowl champion now. So it just speaks to the future that this young player has, and he's going to be great for the next, hopefully, 10, 15 years. And he's got a really bright future, especially what he could do against this one of the all-time best defenses we've seen in recent history. I can't compare them to old defenses of the 1980s or 90s, but definitely one of the better defenses we've seen in recent history.
I agree with that. I think probably Patrick Mahomes is also my standout player. I mean, there's the one interception to Tyreek Hill that was underthrown, and then there was another miscommunication, but I'd still say he was definitely by far the best player on it. And that came up with, there was an interesting comment made to Mahomes after the game about him being, like, quote-unquote, the face or the future of the NFL, and he directed that to Lamar Jackson. What are your guys' opinions on that little debate right there yourself?
I mean, I think personally, I don't really know how close it is, because as good as Jackson was, he was MVP. He had a great season, and I don't want to take that away from him, but Mahomes, just as a pure quarterback, is far and away, you know, one of the more talented quarterbacks we've seen in a long time, maybe ever. And, I mean, obviously it's early to debate in terms of history, but he's just a ridiculously talented quarterback, and he took this team that, you know, made the playoffs for a bunch of years with Alex Smith, but was just never able to elevate and, you know, take that next step to the Super Bowl. But we finally saw it this year. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really think it's that close in terms of him and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, obviously Lamar Jackson recently won the MVP for the season, which is just a regular season award. We've seen some great players in the past win the MVP, so he's in great company, obviously. But in terms of the face of the NFL, I would have to put that on Patrick Mahomes. I would agree with Harrison, where he just won the Super Bowl. That's the highest stage in football. He performed extremely well besides those two errors in terms of interceptions. And he just overall has a much brighter future, in my opinion. Not that Lamar Jackson's future is not bright, because he's an exceptional runner and a very good passing quarterback. But Patrick Mahomes is more of a pure quarterback that can run when he needs to, instead of built more around the run would be Lamar Jackson. And I feel like the NFL is more suited for Patrick Mahomes' play style, as he can finish the game in the pocket and make some of those deep throws that we've seen him make. And Lamar Jackson's obviously special, and he's got a bright future as well, but the face of the NFL would definitely be Patrick Mahomes.
I pretty much 100% agree with that. Because Lamar Jackson, I think we all agree, completely deserved the MVP award, no doubt about that. But a lot of his stats are, I mean, a lot of his highlights were still, like, running plays. And by no means am I one of those people that thinks, like, he is, like, really a running back or anything. Like, I think he has a great arm, especially with the receiving core they're trying to build around him. Like, they are suiting it to him. That's part of the reason the Ravens were so good. And I agree, though, Patrick Mahomes is the future. I think he'll have a longer and a better career than him. But I'm really excited for this rivalry. And really, to move it back towards the Super Bowl, what, like, any other thoughts you want to bring out about the Super Bowl game between you two?
I mean, I just think we talk about Patrick Mahomes a lot. And I just think this 49ers defense, like we were talking about, the best passing defense in the NFL this season. And while he did have two interceptions, he still put up almost 300 yards of offense, had two passing touchdowns, and it's just so hard to contain this guy. And it's only his second year starting. He's only going to get better. So I just think this is a Super Bowl. This is going to be their first Super Bowl, but it definitely won't be their last. And, you know, this definitely could turn into another one of those big dynasties.
Yeah, to your point, I agree. And that only it only adds to the point in terms of Andy Reid being his coach. He's such a bright offensive mind. And we've seen him over his 20-year career, 20-plus year career, be successful. But now he has one of the top quarterbacks that, in terms of talent, we've ever seen. But for me, the key to the game, or the key to the outcome of the game, was Kyle Shanahan's play calling towards the end of the game. We kind of touched on it earlier. But specifically, there was a 2nd and 5. 49ers had the ball in their own territory, about the 20 or 25-yard line, after a score by the Chiefs, and the score was 20-17. At 2nd and 5, they called a passing play, which was an incompletion, led them to have to call another passing play at 3rd and 5, and that drive took less than a minute. It was a 3-and-out after two incompletions by Jimmy Garoppolo, and I just think that if they would have ran the ball on 2nd and 5, maybe they didn't get the look that they wanted or had the personnel out there that they wanted in terms of defense. But if they would have run the ball, they could have kept that play or that drive going and really grinded out on the ground and kept the ball away from Patrick Mahomes. Instead, they gave the ball back and didn't end up scoring any more points because they had to pass from that point forward. But that just stood out to me in terms of the outcome of the game.
You know, you talk about both the coaches, and Andy Reid's had some great quarterbacks, and you're talking about the great offensive minds. He's had Donovan McNabb. I mean, Michael Vick, kind of towards the end of Vick's career, but still, he had Michael Vick, and he got at least one really good year of him. Now, Patrick Mahomes, and I think Patrick Mahomes is probably the best quarterback he's had. Like, all three of those quarterbacks have some similarities, but are all very good quarterbacks, and I think you're seeing the best to come, and this is only the beginning. I don't know. I don't want to bet on them winning another Super Bowl, because that is so hard in the NFL, especially with Sammy Watkins. What he said before the Super Bowl about potentially taking a year off or going somewhere else if he gets cut because of his contract and can't agree to something lower. But also, you mentioned Kyle Shanahan, the questionable play calling. This is the second Super Bowl where Shanahan has been the offensive player call and they have blown a 10-plus lead. I mean, he's responsible, quote-unquote, for two of the biggest three comebacks in NFL history. Do you think he deserves all the blame he's getting, or do you think it's a little bit of an overreaction? I mean, personally for me, I know, like, I agree that there should be some blame on him, but I don't know how I feel about all this blame on him. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I'm kind of where you're at, where there's definitely some blame towards him, but obviously not all of it. And, I mean, when you go back to the Patriots Super Bowl, the defense still let up, like, 25 points or whatever it was in the last 10, 15 minutes of the game. So it was still, you know, also on the defense. And then same with this. Like, his offense couldn't get going, but the defense also let up those 21 unanswered points to end the game. So, yeah, I just think my biggest frustration with it is they just didn't try and target and get George Kittle, who is their best offensive weapon as a pass catcher. And, you know, he was limited in this game, limited all playoffs, and it worked when they were able to run the football. But when they needed those big plays down the stretch, when they were trying to get the last drive to make the comeback and take the lead, they didn't try and target their best pass catcher when he was lined up on Terrell Suggs on a bunch of plays. And so that's where my biggest blame is with him.
Well, the Chiefs offense or team as a whole trailed in every playoff game by 10 points or more. So I don't know how much of this blame goes on Kyle Shanahan. Obviously, it was a factor. Should have ran the ball more, but Patrick Mahomes is special. We've seen that. And if he can somehow figure out a way to start some of these games the way that he's shown he can finish them, then the NFL has to really watch out, because his only problem and the only really blaring concern in his game, which is very small compared to the whole picture, is the way that they start the games and his offense. But if they could figure out a way to start those games the way that they finish, then it could be very dangerous for the rest of the NFL.
I agree. I mean, they kind of do feel like that first quarter is a really big feeling out period for the Chiefs, which is kind of dangerous because you saw how big of a lead the Texans built on them. Overall, you mentioned tight end not getting Kittle involved. Neither tight ends were involved either as much as I expected. For, I would say, two of the best players on the field are both at the tight end position. Neither of them really did that much for me. Overall, to wrap up my thoughts, I'll let you guys wrap up yours too. The Super Bowl, it was a good Super Bowl, especially compared to last year. There was a good, the last few years. I mean, Super Bowl 52, we saw a lot of offense. Super Bowl 53, we saw a lot of defense. I felt like this was a good mix. I felt like it was two likable teams. We didn't have the Patriots, so there was nobody, like, no hate into the Super Bowl, really. I think it was good for the NFL. I think it was good for both teams. Yeah, the Niners choked a little bit, but no, I still feel like they're a very good team and also have a very good chance at coming back.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. I thought overall this is a good, fun game to watch where we saw a good mix of offense and defense. And, yeah, I mean, I think we'll both see these teams, maybe not in the Super Bowl next year, but they're going to be competing, and a lot of young players in both these teams' cores that, you know, for the next at least 3, 4, 5 years, these are going to be teams that we're going to be talking about in January. You know, are they going to be in the Super Bowl? Because they have great coaching and great players on their team.
Yeah, obviously, since the NFL playoffs is a single elimination tournament, we can't guarantee any playoff appearances in the future. I mean, any Super Bowl appearances in the future. But, yeah, I definitely agree that these two teams have bright futures. Their quarterbacks are both very capable. Their rosters around them are also one of the two best in the league. But, yeah, these two teams have bright futures, and I'm excited to see how they compete with some of these teams that come back and are going to try to take over that lead at the top of the NFL.
Yeah, with the end of the NFL season, that really brings the spotlight to the NBA, at least especially until the MLB season starts. Right around the corner is the All-Star Game in Chicago next weekend. Every year, there's always the question about, did anybody get snubbed? Are the starters correct? Do you agree with the captains? Let's start with you, Harrison. What are your opinions on these All-Stars this year?
Well, I think that I'm just going to talk about Devin Booker, who pretty much has a consensus around the NBA and the media is probably the biggest snub that we have this year, where he's putting up 27 points a game, 6 assists per game, shooting over 51% from the field. And, you know, there's some great guards in the West, which makes it tough for him to make the All-Star game, which is why he hasn't been able to make it in the past. But, you know, this is a year where there's no Steph Curry, and, you know, some guys have been hurt where he was able to take that jump. And I think that he should have made it personally over Russell Westbrook just because Westbrook, his impact to the Rockets was expected to be a lot more, and he just hasn't been able to elevate them. And he's actually been – the team has actually been worse with him on the court, while Devin Booker has pretty much been the only team that has kept – or the only player that has kept the Suns afloat. So, for me personally, he's the biggest snub from the All-Star game.
Yeah, I would have liked to see Devin Booker participate in this All-Star game. He's a great young player, but as you mentioned, the West is very stacked in terms of guards, especially in the reserves. We have Damian Lillard, Donovan Mitchell, Chris Paul, which really cannot be debated as they're the backbones of some of their teams right now. But yeah, Russell Westbrook is kind of a question mark right now. He is averaging 27 points, 8 rebounds, and almost 8 assists, which are pretty good numbers, but I would agree where his impact to the Rockets was supposed to be a lot more than it was. These reserves for the All-Stars are voted by the coaches, so it's how they view this. It's not really how the fans or anything else view it. It's it comes down to the coaches. So I guess they appreciate Russell Westbrook's game more, or I guess put him in because he's a veteran. But I guess adding one more spot is the only other solution, because Russell Westbrook, he's not having a good year or a great year by any means, but he's definitely not having a bad year. So I would have liked to see both of these guys be All-Stars. Obviously, everybody can't be an All-Star, but Devin Booker should definitely be a participant.
I agree with both of you guys about Devin Booker for sure. You talking about how the coaches vote on who are the reserves, it's a good point to bring up, because I very much felt like my initial reaction to the reserves were at least that, like, the reason Russell Westbrook got in was for ratings. I mean, the NBA is a business. This is one of the highest rating weekends between the dunk contest, just everything going on. There's a lot of hype around it. And, I mean, granted, people, obviously everyone is mad pretty much that Devin Booker didn't make it. But also, when you think about it, who's a bigger name? Russell Westbrook, Devin Booker. Like, who's going to draw fans, all not just around the United States, but around the world? And that's going to be Russell Westbrook. And I agree with both of you. I think Booker should be in over that. And then also, the East was interesting because I don't disagree with any of the picks on the team. But Sabonis, for instance, like, I could have seen other people over him. I don't know who I would have picked. I don't know that I really care. I feel like that last spot, there was a lot of people you could put in. And my biggest problem with the East is personally, so Jimmy Butler is listed as a small forward this year. So he has to be voted in as a front court starter. And he did not get that votes over Pascal Siakam, Joel Embiid, and
Giannis.
Giannis, thank you. And I understand those three players over him. But Jimmy Butler, especially me as a Heat fan, I watch a lot of their games. He doesn't just play the three, he also plays the two. So I feel like he should have been able – he had more votes than Kemba Walker. I think he's played better than Kemba Walker. I think he deserved that backcourt starting over Kemba Walker. Because granted, like, they're talking about positionless basketball, excuse me, and that's why they have two point guards starting in the backcourt for the East. Well, Jimmy Butler plays multiple positions. I think you could argue about him there too. So that's really my only problem. So talking about now let's get away from the snubs. Are you guys even really excited about All-Star Weekend? I'm just genuinely curious because I feel like it's very questionable question in the NBA right now.
I mean, I think it's definitely not what it used to be. And I think the dunk contest, I get excited for it, but I feel like some years I'm let down, especially after the Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon dunk contest. I think it was 2016.
Yep, Toronto.
It just hasn't been the same since. I mean, hopefully this year it's better with Aaron Gordon back in it. Like, for the game, I'm not that excited. I think it's interesting, the new twist they added with three mini games in the fourth quarter with the tribute they're having to Kobe Bryant. So I think that's interesting, so maybe I'll tune in for some of that. But, I mean, overall, I'm not hugely interested in the game.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it a little bit with Aaron Gordon, who hasn't won the dunk contest yet, but obviously put on a great show for us back in 2016. He's back in the dunk contest. And there's some other big names that are in some of these competitions that happened before the All-Star game. But for the All-Star game in specific, I would say that I would agree that it's not as or exactly what it used to be in terms of defense and players putting more effort into it because of load management, and their concern for health is at an all-time high. But overall, I mean, it is still a game in which the NBA puts the so-called best players in their league on the floor at one time, and they compete within a conference. So I mean, obviously, it's going to be an interesting game. We'll talk about it afterwards, and it's a headline. But yeah, it's not what it was back in the early 2000s or 2010s, where you had Kobe Bryant playing elite defense against LeBron just for the show of it. And so yeah, we'll miss that aspect of it. But overall, it's still an entertaining aspect of the weekend.
I kind of agree with you guys. The game itself doesn't interest me that much. I think it has a little bit of potential in some ways this year because there are 7 first-time All-Stars. And I think you're more likely to see effort out of those guys than you will from people like LeBron. I don't want to say it's another weekend, because obviously everyone knows it's a special weekend with a lot of meaning, especially this year with everything that's gone on with the NBA recently with Kobe Bryant's passing. So I think we might see a little bit more effort. I think the fourth quarter, what they're doing with it is really cool, but I'm worried that because the team that's leading only has to score 24 points, I'm worried that it'll go by very quickly. And I agree, the dunk contest looks really interesting. The three-point contest concerns me a little bit when I got the notification that Zach LaVine's going to be in it, just because, I mean, I don't think Zach LaVine's that good of a shooter, but I agree, the dunk contest should be really good. Aaron Gordon, Derek Jones Jr., Pat Cunningham. I forget who the fourth even is, but it should
Dwight
be.
Howard.
Oh, it is Dwight Howard. You're right. I think that should be a good contest. I don't expect much from Dwight, but the other three I think will be all very fun to watch. And even if they don't succeed very well, I think they'll pull out some interesting attempted dunks. And really, I think we're going to see one of the best we have. But let's move on now. All-Star Weekend means we're getting towards the end of the year in general. So let's go into award races. Let's start with MVP. Who are your candidates, and really, who do you have winning right now?
So right now I have Giannis as my number one MVP candidate, just because, you know, he's on the best team in the NBA. He's the best player on that team. And, I mean, his numbers, as they were last year, are off the charts, putting up 30 points per game, 13 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game. He has the third most win shares in the NBA, which is basically an estimate of the number of wins a player contributes to his team. So that's basically saying he's won 8.4 games for his team this year, which is ridiculous. And he's doing this in only 30 minutes, which is also unbelievable out of a 48-minute game. So that's why he's my number one MVP right now.
Yeah, I would agree, where Giannis is my leading candidate to this point. It's very rare in the NBA where we see players win back-to-back MVP, but I think Giannis could do it. As Harrison mentioned, he is the best player on the best team in the NBA, which means a lot. The MVP isn't only an award for the best player, but it's also a winning award. You have to be winning to win. Like, you don't see players on bad teams ever win the MVP. Whether that's they have to be playoff teams at least, and his team is playing at a surreal level. For me, the other candidates would be LeBron. Obviously, he's always in that conversation when healthy. Luka Doncic, he's been injured of late, but he's putting up some very good numbers, almost 30 points per game, 9.7 rebounds per game, and 9 assists per game. So he's close to a triple-double in averages, which is very good. He's playing lights-out offense. And another dark horse candidate for me would be Damian Lillard, who in the past 10 games is putting up 42 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, and 9 assists per game. Those are really good numbers. Obviously, that's not really sustainable. But if he were to come close to those numbers, his season average is 30 points per game. So increase that a little bit. And his team's the 9th seed in the West. So obviously, you'd have to get them into the playoffs, maybe the 7th, the 6th seed, to be in real consideration for the award. But he's just a dark horse candidate of mine that I would consider.
You know, you mentioned you have to win, and that's true. The lowest seed any team has been with an MVP on it is a few years ago with Russell Westbrook, when they were the 6th seed the first year that Kevin Durant left the Thunder. And I kind of agree with you. I agree with both of you, with Giannis by far is the leading candidate. I am looking at right now, I have basketballreference.com pulled up. looking at their MVP award tracker, and he has a 56.1% probability to win the award. And that, honestly, that surprises me that he's that second is so far below him with James Harden at 12.2, which I completely disagree with. I don't think James Harden should be in a top three candidate right now, personally. But also, it surprises me that he only has 56% of the quote-unquote votes from whoever's making this right now. And you kind of stole my thunder. Damian Lillard's honestly second on my list. If they get up to that six seed, five seed, I mean, they're like, they're under 500, but they have, they're playing some of their best basketball, some of the best basketball in the NBA right now. And that's because of Damian Lillard. I completely expect him, if they even get close, if they get above 500 this year, I expect him to give Giannis a real running for his money. Now I want to move over, what's your guys' opinions on the Rookie of the Year race? And also, to second that, what's, do you think Zion has a chance at it at all?
So right now, I'm assuming both of you, in that Ja Morant is my Rookie of the Year. And that's because he just put up great numbers, and the Grizzlies were not a good team at all last year, obviously. They had the second overall pick, and he has led them and this young core of guys to right now the 8th seed in the West. And obviously, like you guys mentioned, the Trailblazers are making a run at it with Damian Lillard going off now. But, yeah, I mean, right now he's my Rookie of the Year. And then in terms of the Zion question, I personally think unless Ja Morant gets hurt, I don't think Zion will be able to catch him, just because if Ja Morant plays a full season where he plays pretty much every game, if he sustains these numbers, then I just don't think Zion, who only plays the last 3 or 4 months, will be able to catch him.
Yeah, for me, Ja Morant is the Rookie of the Year right now. You mentioned the 8th seed in the West, which is important. I mean, all of these awards are have winning in consideration. Obviously, they wouldn't award a player with one of these awards on a really bad team. So the 8th seed is really significant, especially for a team that finished worst in their conference last year, or second worst in their conference last year. But I would say I would give Zion a slight outside chance only because of his name. The people that vote for this award, if he puts up some ridiculous numbers in the next 3 or 4 months, then I would feel like he has an outside shot. I don't think that it's fair that he has a shot, but I think his name's so big. I mean, he's the biggest name that we've seen come out of or enter the NBA since LeBron James. So just because of that, I would give him a slight shot to win Rookie of the Year, but right now Ja Morant's my favorite, and I think that he should take home the award at the end of the season.
I completely agree again with both of you guys. Ja Morant is by far the Rookie of the Year. I don't think Zion really has a chance. If I was a betting man and wasn't going to bet for Ja Morant, I would bet for Zion, because I think he's the only one that could somehow do it. I think Ja has such a lead, though, that something just completely magical would have to happen. I'm more interested in how the voting ends up after Ja Morant. I'd be interested if Zion can get up to second, Kendrick Nunn, Michael Porter Jr., Eric Paschal. I'm seeing Matisse Thybulle lots of places. I mean, I don't know about his offensive production. I know his defensive production has been great. And then also people like Tyler Hero. There's a lot of good rookies in the NBA. I think obviously it's great for our future, but I just find it's going to be very interesting to see how the NBA, how the voters decide who was the best rookie after Ja. And I wouldn't be surprised if Zion gets second. But besides Zion, because there'll be an asterisk next to him no matter what, I'll be interested to see how that figures out. And finally, what do you guys think for Coach of the Year right now?
So right now, my Coach of the Year is Nick Nurse, just because after losing Kawhi Leonard, no one really thought that the Raptors would be this good this year, and they're the number one team in the East right now, number two team in the East. They have the third best record in the NBA, and so that's just accredited to Nick Nurse and how good of a coach he is. And I mean, even last year we saw him come in, win a championship year one, but this year without Kawhi, having the second best team in his conference is an unbelievable accomplishment from him.
Yeah, Nick Nurse is my leading candidate as well. Not only the fact that they're second in the East and third in the NBA, but that removal of Kawhi Leonard really highlights that for me. I expected them to make a drop, maybe 6 to 8 seed in the East, really just drop in production and team success because of that loss of Kawhi Leonard. But they've accepted that. They've moved on. Pascal Siakam, he's had a wonderful year. And I think his development has a lot to do with the coaching of Nick Nurse. The way that they're playing as a unit and playing defense is just extraordinarily unexpected in terms of what I had expected for the Raptors at the beginning of the season. But for me, another candidate would be Frank Vogel for the Lakers, only because he's a first-year coach for the Lakers. Obviously, he has previous head coaching experience, but to be able to mesh those great talents of players and their personalities is something that's ridiculously hard to do and really underestimated. Obviously, the Lakers have talent to be the first team in the West, and they should be. But it was just a matter of fact of whether or not Frank Vogel could mesh those personalities and those players together to be able to win. And I think he's done a great job at that.
Again, I think we all kind of have agreed with this. I mean, we've agreed on all the award races. I agree that right now Nick Nurse and the Raptors are the most deserving because everyone just expected a fall off from the Raptors this year that honestly I just haven't seen them have at all. If anything, I don't think it'll translate into the postseason as well, but they played as well in the regular season as they did last year. And so I think that's a really big deal for them. And I think part of that is, though, because they played without Kawhi so much last year, but I don't think that's something that should matter, and I don't think it's something the voters will think about. Others include, I agree with Vogel, I agree with Budenholzer is a big deal, even though I think it's just because his team is so talented, but I think he's a great coach. Brad Stevens, I think, deserves some looking at, because even though I think a big deal was the locker room and the issues between the players last year, he's just a great coach and deserves some looking at. I think anyone in the top five of the East, that includes Eric Spoelstra and Nate McMillan for the Pacers. I think everyone, the East is really, we were talking about it before the podcast. Jake, you said you were surprised with how top heavy the East is in general. And I think they all deserve some looking at. So I would though have to say Nick Nurse is definitely coach of the year.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys are in consideration, and it could really go to anybody right now. But the three of us just agreed that Nick Nurse is the leading candidate at this point.
Yeah, and also with Budenholzer, I mean, he has Giannis, obviously. He has Middleton, but, I mean, me and Jake were talking about this earlier today where, I mean, is their number three Eric Bledsoe? They don't have, like, a really talented player after Middleton or someone that you would consider a great NBA player, which is why it's so amazing. They have a 45-7 record. They're the best team in the NBA by far right now. And, I mean, maybe the leading contender for the championship. That's another debate. But I think that the fact that he's able to mesh all these players together, especially with a player like Giannis, who has such an unreal skill set, but someone that could be tough to play with, he's able to mesh it all together. So that's why he impresses me a lot, too.
Yeah, I agree with that. Their third player being Eric Bledsoe should normally, I think that makes most people cringe when you hear, but it's something they've worked really well. They've built a team that works so well around Giannis and for that system, and that's why they're on pace for 70 wins. We've talked about the top of the top of the NBA. Let's talk about one of the worst franchises right now. The Knicks firing their president. Just a few days before, I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday. It'll go out Friday after the trade deadline, but just days before the trade deadline. What's your guys' opinion on that? Is it as dumb as it sounds when you say firing their president, like, just a few days before the trade deadline?
Well, I think a lot of what happens within that organization is corrupt, and we don't have any explanations for that because of one man, and that would be Dolan, their owner. But yeah, I don't really see the Knicks having much success in the next 10, 15, 20 years if Dolan is the owner of that franchise, only because we've seen him try to build a roster around Carmelo. He brought in Phil Jackson, who was still trying to run the triangle years after the NBA had evolved and Steph Curry was changing the game in just ridiculous fashion. But, yeah, I do think it's interesting and questionable that it was only a few days before the trade deadline. That's obviously not something that most franchises in the NBA do, and it's not a common practice. But I think a lot of that just goes back on the owner.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm from New Jersey, and so I know firsthand what the Knicks are about. I have a lot of Knicks fans around me, so I know that I know their pain. Dolan's awful, and then I just think it's interesting that what you said, Chase. Why today? Just a few days before the deadline, and you know, yesterday. And so Monday he was negotiating a trade for D'Angelo Russell with the Warriors, and so now you're going to go from...
Which almost went through.
Yeah, which almost went through. So, he submitted an offer, and then the Warriors counter-offered back. Would you really let him make that trade if you were going to fire him? So, just a lot of questionable decisions. And then another one, too, which, I mean, would be resolved on Friday when you guys are listening to this, but Marcus Morris, Steve Mills was saying, isn't on the trade block, and now all of a sudden he is because he's gone, so... I mean, I just think that whole organization, like you said, Jake, is corrupt, where something with the communication isn't right, or just, no one really knows what they're doing or what their plan is. It just seems like they're walking into darkness right now, and no one really knows where this team is headed in the future.
Yeah, the firing of Steve Mills really does surprise me right now. And I, again, seems to be pretty agreeable today. The Knicks are very corrupt right now, and I think it comes back to Dolan, as you mentioned, Jake. I think Dolan needs to be gone, but it's really hard as the owner to, like, force an owner out. And I think Dolan is seeing an influx of money because of how corrupt the Knicks are. It's weird, but, like, some people like to go see just these terrible, like, a terribly run organization. They like it's in the news because of how bad they are, and I think Dolan's using it. I'm not sure he deserves his job. I'm not sure Mills deserved his job. The D'Lo thing is really I don't know if it's a smart move, but it's the best move they can make. Like, I mean, one thing you need in the NBA is a star, and D'Angelo Russell is right there at star level. He was an all-star last year, and obviously not this year. But the other thing is, the only reason I think you fire your president right now, and we've heard this for a long time, that they want the Raptors president, Masi Yerja, or however you pronounce that. I'm just terrible with names. But if you have a deal in place, then I understand it. But it's just like, again, hey, we want this guy. We're going to go after this guy. It's not, hey, we have this guy set. So this really surprised me with the timing.
Yeah, and I think... going back to Dolan, I mean, I just looked it up, and they have one playoff series win since the year 2000. That says a lot. It's 2020 now, and so that's 20 years that they have one playoff victory to account for. And obviously, there's been a lot of rotation in terms of players, coaches, executives in that organization, but there's been one man that's been there, and that is the owner. So, like you mentioned, Chase, it's hard to, you can't fire the owner because he obviously is the owner, but there needs to be some changes, and New York fans should just riot outside of the Madison Square Garden until he decides to sell the team is my only explanation to how the Knicks are going to get better. I mean, I don't know how else to say it.
And also, with, like, the direction, there's always these rumors around trade season about who they want to go after, and you know, D'Angelo Russell, they almost traded for yesterday. Karl Anthony Towns, his name has been thrown out there. A lot of, you know, mid-20s, I guess so-called stars in the NBA have been rumored to go to the Knicks, but it's not like they're one piece away from winning a championship, and trading away these young assets that they've gotten in the draft recently will get them to the playoffs or to a championship. Like, they need a lot more. So it was just odd to me that they were trying to go after these players when they need a lot more than that. And then also, with Ujiri, this is a guy, like you said, Chase, for years they've been trying to go after and get. And, you know, he's under contract until next summer. So either you wait for that or you got to give up draft compensation. So is that something you want to do? There's just a lot of questions about this franchise right now.
There are. I was thinking about that. Like, they're talking. I'm surprised that the Warriors even made a counter offer to the Knicks, because pretty much the Knicks offer includes at least one power forward, if not two, because they have so many. A backup point guard that was I won't say overhyped, but did not live up to potential in the NBA and landed on the Knicks. And then you probably have to tie in at least one, if not more, first round picks to that. And that's not that appealing outside, like, because if you give them a star player, they're bound to get at least a little bit better, a little bit worse draft selection if you get two picks. So besides this first round pick, I mean, you're looking at potentially Taj Gibson, if you're lucky, Marcus Morris, Frank Ntilikina, maybe you want Dennis Smith Jr., I don't know, a first round pick this year, and then a maybe a late lottery pick again in a few years. And that's just tough. And you mentioned that the Knicks have one playoff series win since 2000. And that was in 2012, 2013, where they were like a game behind the Heat for the first seed in the East when they had LeBron. Regular season, they went 2-2 against the Heat. Everyone felt really hyped about it. And they struggled to win the first round against a Boston Celtics team that wasn't that good at the time, and then lost to the Pacers in the second round. So there's so much going on in this organization. I mean, just looking at this, they have like four different coaches in the past like 8 years, which is really, really impressive in a bad way. And to wrap up all my thoughts, they probably did need a replacement at president, but now wasn't the time. And I just don't get it. But then again, I don't get the Knicks.
Yeah, the Ujiri idea is, I mean, an excellent idea, but you have to spend that money correctly and be able to have a good relationship with your owner if you're the team president. It's not something where the franchises normally just give full rein. They normally have to get some sort of approval from the owner, and I feel like, once again, with James Dolan being the head of that franchise, there's... You can get Ujiri in there, but then, like you said, you might have to give up draft compensation for him. So then he comes in with less draft picks than if he were to go to anywhere else. So it's just a really complicated situation. I'm not too sure that he'll sign with them if he's a free agent in a few years. But, yeah, it's just really a bad situation for the city of New York right now, and I feel bad for Knicks fans.
Yeah, I mean, so one of my best friends from home is a huge Knicks fan, and literally all he does is complain about them. So it's really tough to be a Knicks fan these days. And, I mean, they haven't won a championship in over 40, 45 years. And then, but just going back to now, with Dolan, you bring in Ujiri, but does that solve anything? That would really show, is Dolan the overarching issue? Has he been hiring the wrong guys, or is he making the wrong decisions at the top? Because it seems like every few years, they're ready to rebuild, embrace this rebuild, but then they sign these old veterans. Like, it was either 2016 or 2017, they signed Derrick Rose, they had Joakim Noah, all these guys who were good in the past, but now, you know, when you're trying to, they were trying to win when they should have been rebuilding, and then that sets them back even more. Dolan is a big issue, and he's not going to sell the team anytime soon, but, I mean, that's what the Knicks need.
So, going from one of the worst teams in the NBA right now, I was going to say that we predict our finals matchup. So for me, I was thinking about this a little bit, but I would have the Bucks representing the East only because of how good Giannis has played. And I think that despite his playoff struggles last year, they can learn from that a little bit. They lost the 76ers, but I think that they can overcome that, overcome some of their roster flaws, and make it to the NBA Finals. And then for the West, I think that the Lakers will make it. And the Clippers are right there. I really want to take them because of Kawhi Leonard and his season that he had last year. But I think that LeBron has one more really good playoff campaign in him, especially with alongside Anthony Davis and some of those. I hope they make a roster change in the next few days, maybe acquire a Derrick Rose or somebody that can help them off the bench. But for me, it would be the Bucks and Lakers for the NBA Finals.
So right now, I would agree with you on the Bucks in the East. And then I think sitting here right now, I might just go with the Clippers because I feel like they have more scoring ability outside of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, where you have Lou Williams, Pat Beverly can score a little bit, and then down low you have Montrezl Harrell. And you know, the Lakers have some good scoring too, but like you said, Jake, in the coming days when the trade deadline hits, it'll be interesting to see which pieces these guys add. You know, maybe one of them gets Andre Iguodala or like you said, Derrick Rose. It'll be interesting to see, you know, where those guys go and how much that will impact the finals this year.
I'm going to start on the West side, mainly because I need to think about the East side as I talk about this, but I definitely, you mentioned Andre Iguodala, and I pointed right at you right away. That's exactly what I think. If Andre Iguodala gets traded to an LA team, that team's going to the finals. I don't
any
care.
Team. I think he's really a necessary part to the Warriors' run a few years ago.
He was MVP 1 year.
He won finals MVP, and I mean, I don't think he deserved that finals MVP, but that doesn't matter. But I do agree. I think if either of those LA teams get him, I think that LA team's going. If it doesn't, I'm going to lean towards the Lakers just because, I mean, everything is pointing towards a Lakers NBA championship this year. They've won it 2000 and 2010, so we're starting another decade. That points to the Lakers. It's the stupidest thing ever, but it's true. LeBron, I mean, they're playing well. They're the best team in the West right now. LeBron's playing at MVP level. The passing of Kobe is going to, quote-unquote, inspire them or has inspired them. We'll see all about that. So I think if nothing changes that much, the Lakers have the edge. If the Clippers get Andre, the Clippers have an edge. And then when we look on the East side, I guess I also agree with the Bucks. Mainly, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say anyone else. I would say maybe the Celtics, but I don't see Kemba Walker leading them to the finals. Like, maybe if Kyrie was still on that team and a better team player, if they were playing the way they were this year with Kyrie right now, I would say easily I think the Celtics would be my favorites in the East. I don't see the Raptors doing it. The Heat, again, I don't know. They don't have very good rebounding. They don't have very good three-point shooting. It's tough for them. As much as I'd love to see them, I absolutely don't see the Pacers making it. I would see the Sixers over the Pacers doing it. The East is just so interesting that they have six teams I feel like are very good, and that's so hard for me to pick. So I guess I'm going with the team that's going to win 70 wins this year. It's hard to win 70 and not back it up by at least making the finals.
Yeah, and another comparison to last year for Giannis would be, I mean, Harrison mentioned it earlier when we were talking about MVP, but he's playing significantly less minutes during the regular season, and his team is still successful. I mean, he's 77th in terms of minutes per game, and he's having an MVP-type year. So if you can rest your player game by game, and he's still performing and getting you wins, and he doesn't have to play the whole game because your team's good around you, then I think that sets you up for success down the stretch of the season. You won't be as tired. He'll be definitely ready to go when those playoffs come around. And another comment would just be that the Lakers are a lot – the Clippers are a lot deeper than the Lakers, but I feel like those two teams, Clippers and Lakers, it'll be a L.A. Western Conference Finals matchup. I think we can all pretty much agree on that because they have the star power at the top. But I just choose the Lakers because of LeBron James' history. It might be a little far-fetched because he is getting older, but they do have Anthony Davis, who I think – those two in combination are better than the two in the Clippers, which would be Paul George and Kawhi. But overall, I think that they'll have home field advantage, even though that won't mean much because they're playing in the same stadium. It is a moral thing. I mean, they'll have more wins throughout the regular season. But the only concern I do have is that, similar to Giannis, the duo in for the Clippers are playing significantly less minutes with their load management strategy than LeBron and AD are. So I feel like that could come into play in that series. With Kawhi being rested last year, he had an excellent playoffs. So I do give the Clippers a legitimate shot, and I think that they'll be right there down to game seven. But I'm going to put it in LeBron's hands.
So I just have a question. So we all said the Bucks out of the East. Who do you think they would play in the conference championship right now? If it were me, I might honestly go with the Celtics just because we saw 2 years ago when Kyrie was hurt, Gordon Hayward was hurt, they both weren't there for the playoffs. We saw Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown really take over that team and bring them within a game. They went to game seven, I believe, against LeBron's Cavs to go to the finals. Yep. And so, I mean, if we're able to see them elevate themselves like they did that year. Obviously, last year with Kyrie, they didn't do that. But if they can play like they've been playing in the regular season, bring that into the postseason, add Kemba Walker, add Gordon Hayward, this is a team that I'm not saying they're going to go to the finals, but I could definitely, right now, they might be my favorite to face the Bucks in the conference championship.
Yeah, the Celtics obviously stand out. I would agree with Chase where I don't think the Raptors have that closer per se with the loss of Kawhi Leonard. They're playing great as a team. I think they have an outside shot, but I would give it to the Celtics. Another team that I would consider is be the Heat. I think, as Chase kind of mentioned earlier, they need one more piece, maybe even two. Maybe an Andre Drummond in free agency this summer or trade him. Maybe. I mean, I doubt that that would be able to get done by the trade deadline. But I think they do need one more big, maybe even somebody that can shoot as a big that could really help them. But, yeah, I would have to go with the Celtics. I think Brad Stevens is excellent. He can get them those plays. And, I mean, if they have the ball with 10 seconds to go, I trust Brad Stevens to get his team an open shot, and that's all that matters because they have guys that can hit those shots. And like Harrison mentioned with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum 2 years ago, I mean, that locker room is really a great culture now. Jaylen Brown mentioned it a few weeks ago where they're not getting put down anymore by the absence of Kyrie, and Kemba Walker's really embraced this team. I think he's their leader. He's not as good in terms of basketball, but I think that helps them because he is a team player, and I would agree with Harrison where the Celtics will probably be there in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I want to point out, you mentioned that Kemba not as good as Kyrie, but it's making them better. I agree with that because you're seeing last year, none of us, I think, would say that Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown deserved anywhere near an all-star bid. And obviously Tatum got one. Brown was considered for one. Easily could have replaced Sabonis. Like, I think you could interchange those. So I agree that the Celtics are up there. It's so tough because obviously we can't predict how the top six are going to fall in the East. So basing off the Bucks first and the Raptors, Celtics, Heat, Pacers, Sixers, like if that order were to stay the same, I would say I would probably agree with the Celtics, but I would say it's the winner of the Celtics-Sixers series because they'd have a first-round series against each other. And that is tough, but I very much think that either winner could then go on and beat the Raptors. But if the Raptors play the way they are right now for the rest of the season, I mean, they've won their last 10-plus games. I can only see the last 10, but I see that they've won every single one of them. It might be slightly more than that. That's going to be hard to beat. I think the only team that could beat that is the Bucks. But I would agree, it's Celtics, Sixers, or if the Heat can get up to 3 again and stay out of having to face the Bucks that second series, and if they can make a trade for... I read it this morning. I love this trade offer of Aaron Baines. He's a big man that can shoot. It fits perfectly. I don't want Drummond. I definitely don't want to sign Drummond after this year just because I know they want to go after Giannis. I don't think it will work out for them, but I want them to have the possibility for that. So I think if they could bring in someone like Aaron Baines this year, or I mean, I would be okay with a trade with Drummond as long as like they didn't give up their future and they did not re-sign him. But if they can make a trade that does help them, that's not pointless and doesn't take away from the team, maybe the Heat. But I would agree that it comes down to how that Celtics-Sixers series goes. And that's how I would agree that. I mean, and I would bet on the the Celtics for that one.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think your point about the seeding is that will probably play the biggest part in it because obviously whoever gets the winner of the 4-5 matchup is going to face the Bucks as the one seed. So I don't think that they're going to beat the Bucks. And then, yeah, I mean, the 2-3 seed, it'll be the winner of that. Right now, it's Celtics-Raptors. I'd definitely take the Celtics over them.
Yeah, I would agree that seeding is a huge factor. We talk in the NFL and college football about how you need to be kind of battle-tested to go into some of those games. But in the NBA, it's a best-of-7 series, and you don't have to be battle-tested. It's just about who you're going to play. And so seeding is obviously very significant. If somehow the Sixers could go on a run, get a home field advantage in the home court advantage in the first playoff series, then that could be huge for them as well. I think they're an outside shot. As the 6th seed right now, we don't really see much of them, but they have the talent to compete. And obviously they were one shot away last year with Kawhi Leonard standing in their way. But, yeah, overall, I would just say that the seeding is a huge factor and that the Bucks are my favorite in the East.
So as we wrap that up, so we talked about the All-Star game, the All-Star weekend earlier. I just got an alert on my phone that for the three-point contest this year, the league is adding two shots that are going to be 6 feet behind the three-point line. That'll be worth 3 points each. So that's another interesting switcheroo, I guess, for the for the All-Star weekend this year. What are you guys' first thoughts on that?
I mean, an initial reaction would just be that they're trying to add an element to essentially add entertainment, which is awesome. I mean, some of these guys, like, I mean, I've seen Damian Lillard. He's not going to compete in the three-point contest. I wish he would, but he's been hitting shots from the logo in the past 10 games, or probably all season, but I've seen it in the past 10 games. So guys that have that skill set that can shoot from essentially anywhere on the floor, this would be a way to show off that. And I don't think there'd be any additional entries this late. I mean, the All-Star weekend's coming up pretty soon, so I don't know if anybody will join just because of that rule change, but we could see it as a factor in the future. And I do like the NBA trying to add new elements to these contests to get some of the better players in there. As Chase mentioned earlier, I mean, Zach LaVine should be in the dunk contest, not the three-point contest. And I wish we could see a Damian Lillard or Stephen Clay when they're healthy. I mean, they participated in the past, but not every year like they should be, because they are the best shooters in the league. But overall, I just wish that there would be better talent in these competitions, and I guess this rules change is a way to initiate that a little bit.
I find this interesting because a lot of times 6 feet deep, I guess, really isn't 6 feet deeper, isn't that far back. But like when I think of these deep threes, a lot of times you're running up the court or jogging up the court and pull up. And these, I'm assuming, will be set shots, which isn't a big deal. It's not as far back as I was originally imagining. But it's interesting. I'm not sure how it fits with this year's, like, field. I don't know anyone in the field besides Duncan Robinson and Zach LaVine. And Duncan Robinson, again, I watch a lot of Heat games. I mean, he doesn't pull up from that deep. I don't think it's going to be that much of a factor. Like, I don't think you're going to see it ruin his chances. I don't think Zach LaVine has a chance in the first place. I mean, you said it, I've said it. He should be in the dunk contest, not the three-point contest. It's an interesting factor. I think since we brought up this, we've also kind of mentioned about the NBA changing the All-Star game format. They're doing anything to make this more interesting. And I don't like the switch of the format, as I kind of mentioned earlier. And I don't know how I feel about this. We'll see how it works. Did you pull up the three-point contestants?
Devontae Graham is the only other one that's committed.
Graham.
I have a few more that have been rumored.
Luka Doncic and Trae Young, but yeah. I'm not sure that they're going to actually participate. I mean, it depends on Doncic's health, but like I mentioned earlier, I mean, Damian Lillard should be there every year. CJ McCollum should be there
every
year. And
maybe he will be. I mean,
yeah, but it's some of these guys that are always either rumored or talked about to join these contests never really come upon it, whether that's for health reasons, which is not too risky to participate in the three-point contest, or just to keep themselves from... I don't actually have an answer for why they don't participate, but I mean, the dunk contest makes a little sense. It's a little bit more dangerous and more out there, but if, like, Michael Jordan was the best player in the NBA and he would participate in these dunk contests, if that's the way that it was now, I think that All-Star Weekend would be such a big event. It would be a lot bigger than we're anticipating now, because it would be the best athletes in the world competing at some of these. Even the skills competition is not even that big of a deal, and it should be. So I think that it's up to the players to make this more interesting. The league's doing a lot to try to make it more interesting, but the players just have to participate, or at least the better players.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that Michael Jordan point is great, where he was the best player in the league, and he was in the dunk contest. Like, we've been robbed of LeBron never doing a dunk contest. Maybe even someone like Russell Westbrook, who just has that explosiveness, they've never been able to do it. And I think one good reason is these young players are able to get their name on the map. Like, I remember the first time I heard of Giannis was at the dunk contest when he did it, when he was a young, maybe second or third year player in the league. So, you know, you're able to learn these young guys. And also Buddy Hield is one of the guys that I saw was rumored for the three-point contest. So maybe he has that range. But, yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting new feature they're going to have for it. And, yeah, in the future, like you guys said, Steph, Clay, Damian Lillard, if they do it, that'd definitely be an interesting twist.
Well, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back at it again next week, Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern. Thank you.